Welcome to Founders Unfiltered by a junior VC. We are your hosts, Mazin and Aviral. Aviral, why is it so important for startups to focus on their target customer?
Yeah, I think this is a bit counterintuitive. When you're building a company, the initial reaction or the feeling is to do a lot for everyone. How it has been phrased by some startup founders and some commentators, and you know, I'll just paraphrase it. If you try to be everything to everyone, you'll be nothing to no one. And I think that's not only true for startups, but it's also true for life. But just focusing on the startup ecosystem, it is important because you need to win over customers who are so passionate about you that they will leave whatever they're using. From a resource standpoint, it is better. From a strategy standpoint, it's better. You don't want to stretch yourself too thin, which is why you should do it. If you look at WeWork, you look at Razorpay, you look at Walmart even, they all started focusing on a niche. Walmart did rural US way before it went to New York. WeWork started focusing on startups first before it went to enterprise. Razorpay did that with startups again before going to enterprise. How Peter Thiel puts it, and I really subscribe to that thought process, is that you should dominate a niche before you become big. I think the best example is Facebook, where they just focused on Ivy League colleges. I mean, can you imagine the target addressable market for that is so small before they became the general purpose social network for everyone. So I think that's time-tested wisdom, and it really works.
In this episode, we speak to Neil and Vivek, the founders of iZooto, about how they built their company. Neil started his career with Airtel, where he worked in a variety of roles. He then left to join VoiceTap, a startup that built educational products for the telecom industry. And that's where he met Vivek, who started VoiceTap as soon as he graduated from college. During the time at VoiceTap, they both realized that online businesses need to own the relationship with their customers. The two of them founded iZooto, a platform to help engage with users and get them coming back to the website using push notifications and data analytics. Initially, iZooto focused on small and medium businesses, especially companies in the e-commerce space. But this did not really work out. And as we spoke about, they realized that they need to focus, and that focus was in the media industry, which was underserved. And at the same time, the founders realized that they were much better at servicing larger enterprise customers. Please enjoy our conversation with Neil and Vivek about their journey and how they got to founder market fit to build a large and profitable business without any external funding.
I think both of you are in the enviable position of running a profitable, growing startup. And we're very excited about understanding how that came about. But before that, it would be good if both of you talked about your background and what really inspired you to start this.
I started off my career as a telecom guy. Started off in Airtel, which was the largest telecom operator in India. There, spent quite a few years in product marketing, product development, and then as a business analyst. Post that, co-founded a online travel startup, which had to shut down in a couple of years' time, and then became part of a startup where I met Vivek. That startup was fundamentally into building educational products for telecom operators. That both of us ran quite a few years along with a couple of other guys. But while being part of that startup, while working with a lot of two telecom operators, working with a lot of other businesses, we found that there was a serious issue. While a lot of companies were spending a lot of money on acquisition, but there was a serious issue on engaging and getting the users back on the website. And that's how our journey started for iZooto, building a product which can help the online businesses to get the users back on the website. And we started off with iZooto in 2016.
Right in college is when we had started VoiceTap, which is where I went full-time after college, which is 2011. And then, obviously, Neil joined in around the same time. My background is I did a master's in chemistry at IIT Bombay. And that's the only credential that I have. Apart from that, it's just been the startup journey for the last 10 years now. Pretty much what Neil said, we ran the previous show, where we went through a couple of pivots, obviously had a lot of learnings in terms of how business verticals, how segments, how different markets work. And then we sort of settled on MarTech / AdTech And we agreed that, you know what, this is what excites us the most, which is exactly how we stumbled into what we today have as iZooto.
Would love to understand a little bit more of what you guys do and how you've really almost relentlessly and with a lot of hustle built a profitable SaaS company that is serving global clients out of India. So if you could talk about that a little more, Neil, Vivek, would love to understand what you guys actually do and what your journey has been till date and some learnings from that.
iZooto, in a sense, is a very simple marketing platform that caters to media businesses. Right? Back in VoiceTap, I sort of came across two very simple but very powerful words. One was underserved, and second was inefficiently served. And during our stint at VoiceTap, we sort of figured out that, hey, you know what? The one industry in this world which is served, which remains to be, you know, underserved irrespective of the market, is the media industry. The media ecosystem across the globe, no matter which country, no matter, you know, what segment, right, no matter what category, continues to be underserved in terms of the technologies that are built for them. Pretty much everybody has left the media ecosystem to Google and Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and some of these guys, which is exactly why they have never, you know, you would not see a title like a chief marketing officer or head of marketing for a media business, because that role just does not exist, because they have never been, there are no tools. That industry has not been approached in that manner. And, you know, with internet, with mobile becoming so big, and with, you know, with the true colors of the walled gardens showing up, wherein Google wants to lock people in, wherein Facebook wants to lock users in, wherein the ad share is sort of, the ad share for the publishers or the media businesses is sort of continuously, it's coming under stress, right? Publishers sort of need to, you know, they sort of finally woken up and sort of realized that, hey, you know what? We need to own the relationship with our readers. That is exactly what we help them do. We help them build a direct relationship with their readers. We help them convert those readers into a loyal audience that they can engage and bring them back on the website to consume more content.
Really interesting. So, I mean, this was something that came out of your past experiences. You realized that this is a pain point. It's a good segue to dive into our topic, which is customer segmentation and how do you as a company go about figuring out your DNA. So Neil, if I understand correctly, when you started off, you were initially focusing on small and medium businesses. So can you tell us a bit about that? And I believe that didn't really work so well for you. So can you maybe explain why?
Yeah, when we started off, there was a lot of focus on e-commerce businesses, which were online e-commerce businesses, which were small and medium. I think for us as a business, we thought that's the market segment we would continue to grow in. But at some point in time, two things happened. One was we discovered fantastic use case with media businesses. We realized that here's a market which is clearly underserved, badly needs a product which can help driving engagement and bringing the users back. But at the same time, we also realized that that market also needs a lot of education on why this is important. Besides this, the other thing that happened was small and medium e-com businesses, we realized that there were two problems. One was there was substantial churn, and the churn was not because we had a bad product. The churn was because those businesses itself would shut down way too frequently. And the second thing was that it was very difficult to scale up with a small and medium. If you were giving the service and expecting the business to upgrade to $1,000 a month, $1,500 a month, that almost seemed impossible because these were small businesses. And they were looking for a platform which possibly comes at less than $300-$400 a month. So these two challenges we could clearly see in the e-com business. And in the last couple of years, we have now completely modeled ourselves to serve the underserved market, which is the media publishers. And we've been able to work with some of the largest media publishers in the world right now. I mean, we work with Times of India, we work with India Today, we work with a lot of large publishers in Southeast Asia, including the Tencent and some of the other guys. So focusing on one specific segment, once we've discovered the use case, and then scaling up the business.
Vivek, can you explain to us why push notifications are so relevant for the media business and talk a bit more about how you sort of made that transition? Did you discover this use case by getting a client that came to you, or how did that happen?
Funnily, so when we started iZooto, I remember I had met Avinash from iSpirit. Avinash had asked, so Vivek, who do you sell to? And I remember telling him, anybody and everybody who has a domain name on the internet. Looking back, that answer was obviously, very foolish, because that's just not how you describe a target segment. And because, while we would have sold to pretty much anyone and everyone in 2016, when we sort of, sliced our customers, there were two clear segments that we had. The first one was small and mid-sized e-commerce businesses, right? And the second one was publishers. Not a lot of them were paying us a ton of money, but still, they were sort of using the product. The use case was very, very simple. The editor, when they publish a story, when they break a piece of news, they want to get that news in the hands of readers. I'm saying back in the print days, editors had to wait for an entire night to actually hand over what they had written in the hands of their readers. Thanks to the internet, it now just takes one click. Unfortunately, the distribution is still not controlled by publishers. The distribution is controlled by the likes of Facebook and Google, and so on and so forth, which is where the editors were still limited. While they could publish, while they could create and all sort of stuff, they were not able to still, reach the audience in which they had thought. This is the exact problem these editors or publishers started using iZooto to solve. The moment they would break a piece of news. I remember this is 2018 budget. I remember when the budget roll came out, because that day I was watching the budget. We have had a bunch of customers in the media space since then, right? There was Outlook, there was Bloomberg Quint, there were a couple of more. And the moment the budget was announced in the Lok Sabha, within 5 minutes, right, we had all editors logging onto our dashboard and pushing out notifications with updates. That's really powerful, because literally, take the news and reach their audience, which is in hundreds and thousands, and get them to see their story, to see their work in real time. It just does not get better than this, right? I remember in one of our customer interviews, right, somebody said off the record that this is like crack cocaine, because I'm able to see with just one click, I'm able to see, 1,500, 2,000, 10,000 users reading my article right after I publish it. And that's that's their highest of highs. So literally, that is the one thing which we have been optimizing on the product side, that, hey, how do we make the editor's job simpler? How do we make reaching their audience simpler, faster? So that's the sort of, that's the use case which we discovered when we started engaging with customers more aggressively. As Neil mentioned, back in the VoiceTap days, we used to deal with, large operators, telecom operators. So we were very comfortable, right, selling to enterprises. Our core DNA as a business, or as individuals, or as founders, was, hey, you know what? We are actually very comfortable walking into a room and making a pitch to a CXO team and being at that process for a couple of weeks or months and closing that deal. We were probably not great at, creating a self-serve product like a Canva or an InVideo, I don't know, right? To sort of, where we could, let the magic happen while we sit and, watch. Right, we were sort of, so we enjoyed the whole, sales process of selling to a large enterprise, right? Which is exactly where the transition became very natural for us to walk into a newsroom of editors, digital heads, sales heads, CEOs of media businesses, and just command the market share which we have today.
It's almost counterintuitive, but you guys went from general to really specific and focused on a specific niche, but that makes sense. But as you alluded to, that must have resulted in some organizational changes. You guys were more comfortable, but how did, Neil, maybe you can take this, how did you have to change your company, and how did you have to educate your staff, your sales team to be able to manage this change?
It's a constant process. We're still doing that. It starts from the mindset. First was the mindset of the founders itself. We are co-founders. And we ourselves took a bit of time to understand on what segment we want to serve within a segment, it's also very important, especially when you're dealing with a larger enterprise-ish customer, to clearly understand who the user within that business is going to be. Is it going to be the product head? Is it going to be the revenue head? Or is it going to be the editor or all three? And then you build up an organization which is going to serve those people. So it's a constant journey. Every year we talk about it. This is one of the things that we continue want to instill within our people, that this is a change we are bringing in the organization. It's been 2 years since we started on that journey. The organization itself, the people itself understand that this is a change which is happening. But the fact of the matter is that we still have a lot of small customers in as part of our business. And it's tough to keep serving them, but at the same time, build an organization for a larger enterprise customer. But we're doing that. And the other thing that changes is the kind of people you recruit, especially on the sales and the account management side. You end up recruiting a lot more people who have had exposure with enterprise, people who understand how some of these relationships are so much network driven. They're driven by so many other things just in the product. So these are the things that we do.
So it's almost like you guys found founder market fit, and then once you found that, you kind of worked your way from there.
Sorry, I'm interrupting in between. One of the big challenges remains is that, and you're right, it's a founder market fit, but how do you replace the founder? How would Vivek stop? How would the CEO of Indian Express stop talking to Vivek and start talking to the head of business development? That's a challenge we see a lot more, especially now that we now have so many large enterprise customers, and the founders need to be replaced with someone else.
What Neil mentioned, it's a highly underrated point, and it's not emphasized enough in the industry. Some things cannot be achieved with brute force. Some things require literally endless repetition within the company, within the team, at different points, at different situations. But repetition is literally what sort of it takes to hammer down what has changed in your focus. It's not as trivial as, you know, you throw an offsite, you invite everyone there, you announce your big fancy new goal, and you say, all right, guys, you know, from this point onwards, we will take a left turn and we move in this direction. If this was as simple as that, we would have probably hit, you know, $20 million last quarter. But the alignment part takes a lot of time. If this was a transcript, you know, it would be mentioned in one line, but that's probably the most difficult part of the entire journey. Also, you know, the second point which Neil mentioned, right, which is how do we go from, you know, founder-led sales to founder-driven sales to founder-independent sales. These are three distinct stages. And like once you hit a product market fit, right, I think these challenges or these, these are your next milestones, you know, for us as a sales and marketing team, that, you know, how do we reduce our dependence? How do we sort of make our sales team a lot more independent, right? And this is just not a game of, you know, empowering people.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's the entire company is transitioning. But just to put all of this into perspective, so people can understand the scale that you're operating and the difference in scale, what kind of levels of service do you have to provide? You know, I mean, I believe when we spoke last, you said it was you deliver about 50 billion notifications. How do you do that? Yeah. How do you execute on that?
Because one, we're dealing with large enterprise publishers. I think almost 70 to 80% of our customer base is actually newsrooms. So it's not like, you know, we have, and this is all time sensitive information which is being created on a daily basis, on the fly, literally, which is exactly why the time of delivery, right, or the speed of at which a notification reaches your screen becomes extremely important. I'll give you a very, very simple example, right? Let's go back to the budget notifications. The budget announcements impact the stock market. And if you're late, right, you'll sort of have your readers, late on reacting, right? So, which is why our team sort of obsesses with performance and sort of, ensuring that the scale that you're able to deliver every single notification on time and just in time to sort of, have the editors happy. With enterprises, at times, sophistication is not important. Their biggest requirement is this should work. And when an enterprise says this should work, it essentially means this should work at scale.
I'll give you one example, and you will understand the kind of business these publishers are in. India banned UC Browser, I think, a month back. And UC Browser, for most of the publishers in India, was contributing around 20% of the traffic. UC Browser was kind of a Facebook to these publishers. So these publishers have multiple, they rent their traffic from these multiple sources. UC Browser, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. Over a period of time, they build the organization wherein they're in the business. They don't think about, they don't look at the traffic as customers. The mindset is, how much traffic can I get to the morning? What kind of deal can I strike with Facebook? What kind of deal I can strike with Twitter? How do I put more posts on Twitter so that I get more traffic from Twitter? But what they are not used to do is, once they get the traffic, make them an audience, make them a subscriber, learn more about them, and then engage with them. With push notifications, they finally have a tool on which they can own their audience. And then they can run it as per their own, without being insecure, they can run it the way editorial wants it. Which story they want to push, to which user what they want to push. They can control. So they feel a lot more in control with our tool. These are their own audiences. They're not sharing it with anyone else, unlike their dependencies on any of these platforms, where they rent the audience from these places, and they don't know whether the guy is going to come back tomorrow to them or not. Or if Facebook is going to change some algo, today on my feed, I see Indian Express, tomorrow morning I can very well see that, just because there's a new deal which Facebook has been able to strike. So with us, it completely removes their insecurity.
That's amazing, and I think it's a good segue into wanting to understand how entrepreneurs should be thinking about finding their DNA as founders. And maybe Neil, you can take that one, and the follow-up mm-hmm. question to that is, why did you guys decide to bootstrap and become profitable, remain profitable to this scale? Maybe Vivek, you can take that one.
Discovering, it's so important to discover. See, when we started off iZooto, we thought we were going to change. We were running a business where we were serving large telecom operators and meeting them and trying to do business with them. And we thought we were going to build a SaaS company which is going to serve SMBs. And we started with that. I mean, at the end of the day, the founder DNA, we came back to what our DNA is. And we realized that we are good in doing these things. Let's stick to that. But at the same time, there's so much of learning of building the entire business with the processes that we created for serving SMEs that has kept us Google. And I believe I look back 3 years back and I see that we started doing things which were meant to serve small and medium businesses, and we were not spending a lot of money on those things. And we really pushed hard to bring in efficiency in those processes, whether it was support or customer success. All of that has kept us in extremely good stead when we have gone out and started serving the enterprise. We run the business in an extremely frugal manner, and we've been able to achieve profitability from, I think, the fourth month itself, and we've been profitable every month since then.
Vivek, any thoughts on, you know, making that decision of remaining profitable, like Neil was mentioning? It's a slightly different approach. Most startups in this category tend to raise money very early on, but I think you guys have grown a lot. But love to understand, you know, your growth since you started as bootstrapped and not raised capital.
I think the internal belief is it is easier. It is definitely simpler to run a bootstrap company. We were incredibly lucky with the product that we had in our hands, that we were able to get our first paying customer, I think, within a month or two of our launch. And post that, I think every single month for the first 2 years, we were growing at a rocket speed, which sort of, you know, ensured that there was recurring business, recurring money coming into the bank. Obviously, you know, we had learned some of these lessons in our previous venture, wherein we had realized the value of money in the bank, and there is no better reality. There is, and I think this sort of, you know, till date remains to be the mantra at iZooto, that the money in the bank sort of you know, dictates the comfort that you would have as an organization. You know, it. I think just focusing on revenue was very simple and easy for us, as compared to also growing revenue and managing the team and trying to raise an angel or a seed or a VC round. And then obviously, right, we became part of Opeka as well, I think in 2017. Yeah, that obviously helped a lot in terms of thinking through that, you know, how should we approach capital and how should we approach capital injection in the company. It doesn't have to be always at a cost of equity. There are a lot of innovative ways to raise capital if somebody has to. I think where we are today gives us as founders some great options in general. As a business, as a as an organization, and us as individuals who are stakeholders in the company, we've sort of been able to build great options for ourselves, right? I think that's the more important part, right? To raise capital for iZooto, we can choose today from a variety of paths, right? Including raising serious VC capital, including continuing to grow as we're growing right now to a 10 mil, 15 mil, 20 mil journey, right? Or for that matter, even exiting if we have to. That optionality is what, is something which we really enjoy.
Understood. Amazing. And so the final question that we ask all our guests now is, and that's why we call our podcast Founders Unfiltered, what is that one piece of unfiltered advice that you've got that really changed how you started looking at your life, your career, anything? If you could share that with us.
Fantastic, right? In fact, I was thinking about this today morning when I was listening to a podcast. And this actually, you know, funnily, right, this came in from the director of IIT Bombay. I remember the day one of our freshers year, right? And this was the introduction session where the director gives a welcome address to all the freshers. Obviously, this year, there would not be one. But yeah. And I remember the director mentioned that day, so this is it. You've cracked, Jay. You've achieved something in life. And he said the operating word in this is achieved, which is past tense. So your achievement is behind you. You sort of, you know, you really have to look forward now, right? You cannot, you know, really look back and bask in the glory of what you've achieved and keep on daydreaming moving forward, right? You need to sort of, you know, just look forward, right? And look at the next milestone. I think that's been an amazing mantra. And I've sort of applied this pretty much to every single goal that we have achieved or missed. It has sort of worked really well, right? You know, whether it is, let's say, you know, cycling 50 kilometers, right? Or whether it is hitting a specific revenue goal, right? Once you're past the revenue goal, you know, you really passed it, right? There's not much to be done now. Right? You have to just sort of, set another milestone for yourself and chase that. You know, a lot of people, a lot of times I've sort of seen people getting lax, losing focus, enjoying a bit too much. That does not help.
And this one, I learned from Opeka and it comes from Prasanna. As a bootstrapped entrepreneur, it's very important that at any point in time, you must be able to look at any decision and understand whether this is value or vanity. And I've just seen so many founders in India and all over, they do so many things which are so much vanity. It doesn't impact the business. Maybe it's just helping their own PR. I've seen founders who are doing less than $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a month, talking about MRR, ARR, trying to do a few things which does not even matter to the business. And this came from Opeka. We've learned this from Opeka that it's so important to able to filter out vanity at any point in time from business and focus on the value that any decision that you're going to take, what is it going to do to the business.
And I think that's a very interesting way of looking at things, because it's a little difficult to make that differentiation. Vanity metrics and vanity in general, all that glitter is not gold. It's super attractive in life, but I think the hard and less flashy decisions are the ones that you have to take. So superb. Thank you for sharing that with us, Neil. Thanks, Vivek, Neil, for taking our time to chat with us. We loved this conversation.
And now, a quick summary of what we discussed with Neil and Vivek. They met while working on VoiceTap, a startup that built educational tools for the telecom industry. After that, Neil and Vivek went on to found iZooto, a platform that helps businesses engage with their customers using data and push notifications. When they started, Vivek found himself saying that they sold to anybody and everybody who has a domain name. But over time, they realized that was foolish. They realized that there were two clear segments, small and medium e-commerce businesses and publishers. The use case for publishers was very simple. Back in the day of print media, publishers had to wait overnight for their stories to be printed and distributed. Today, stories can be distributed with one click. But publishers no longer control the distribution. It's controlled by the likes of Facebook and Google. The problem was acute and the media business was underserved. During their VoiceTap days, Neil and Vivek were dealing with large telecom operators. They were very comfortable and even enjoyed selling to enterprises. They could present to CXOs and close deals, but they were not as good at building self-service tools like Canva or Shopify. They pivoted to the media business and it was natural for them. But it was not the same for the team. That has been a continuous journey, evolving into this new enterprise model. It's been 2 years since they pivoted, and they're still serving several small customers, which has been challenging to keep up with. But that was just the start. Now that they've reached founder market fit, the next challenge is actually replacing the founders so that they can serve a lot more enterprise clients. When selling to an enterprise customer, you need to determine who the decision maker is and build up the team accordingly to build a case for the right individual within the company that you're selling to. Focusing on enterprising customers has changed the way that they recruit. They now recruit people who understand the media industry and have a network that they can leverage within the industry. As a founder, it's important for you to understand your market and get to the elusive product market fit. But perhaps it's more important to understand your strengths and also think about founder market fit. Thank you so much for tuning into Founders Unfiltered. I've got a favor to ask you. Will you take a minute to review us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening? Thank you.